Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, June 20th, Tuesday Takeover edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 25-30 minutes or so as we chat with Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Before we do that, I want to remind you of a couple of things going on over at BangTheBook.com. We've got those contests that are going on, Daily Streaker Contest, Monthly Pick of the Day, also those cash prizes for top monthly win percentage, top number of units won, and top ROI. Don't forget about my written content over there, my MLB Picks Analysis article, which goes up every day, Daily Fantasy. I've got Travelers Championship, this week's PGA Tour event, also some Daily Fantasy for that. Plenty of stuff going on over there at the website. I know it feels like it's kind of a downtime in the handicapping world, but as we'll chat with Brian here in a couple of minutes, certainly not downtime for those guys, the professional handicappers, professional bettors, getting everything in order for the football season. If you want to make sure that you've got everything in order for the football season as well, head over to bangthebook.com, check out those sportsbook reviews. If you're in the market for a new book for the upcoming football season, you can get some good thoughts there, some information on deposit methods, bonus options for all those sportsbooks as well. Of course, as you know, Bang the Book Radio presented by DSI Sportsbook. Use the promo code BTB Radio. $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. So if you're interested in signing up for a new sports book as we get closer to the return of Pigskin, feel free to check out DSI or any of those other sports books to chat about over there at the website. Without further ado, we'll bring on today's guest. That is the great Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back on the show.
Yeah, good to have you back on the broadcast here. And got to see you a couple of weeks ago when I was out there in Las Vegas. Had a good time, good chance to catch up out at the South Point. And some of the topics that we're going to discuss today kind of came up a little bit while you and I were talking, and something I've thought about here a little bit recently. But before we get into that, as I mentioned, football, it's going to be here before we know it. College football season starts a little over 2 months here. How's your college football planning going so far?
It's going very well. They've already opened up season wins over at South Point and games of the year, week one, all that kind of stuff. So I've got a few of those in my pocket already, and the lines are already moved. In comparing my lines to some of the other handicappers, and I know a couple of them are on your show, we're all seem to be on the same side. So that's a good thing to be on when I'm looking at comparisons, because when the lines come out originally, the bad part is you're going your information at that point against the lines makers. The good part is it's just you against the lines maker as opposed to thousands and hundreds of thousands of bettors on game day. So you have to trust what you've got against them. And luckily so far, every line move has been in my direction. So that's a good thing. Now all we have to do at this point is have to win them.
Now, one of the things that's really nice for you being out there in Vegas and having the network that you have, and this is something that a lot of our listeners probably don't have, because they probably have friends that are maybe interested in it, but they probably aren't as in-depth as our listeners are. Our listeners obviously care a lot since they take the time to listen to this show, you know, read content, support our guests, all that type of thing. But one of the luxuries that you do have, you know, is that ability to compare notes with other people. At the same time, you want to make sure that you're thinking for yourself, that you're, you know, following your convictions as well. Is that a challenging thing for you? Because I know you've got some friends that you really do respect the opinions of, but you also want to stay true to what's worked for you.
Yeah, you definitely do. And for example, before the season starts, you know, we always have the Tuesday meeting every week during the football season. So I know a lot of guys that bet for a living out here, and that's one of the big advantages. But I do my own power ratings before the season starts. I bet off of those power ratings. And then what we do is most of the guys in town that bet for a living are at the same places that I am. So, for example, after we placed our bets, and, you know, we're not going to trample over somebody else if they say, hey, I got a tip on this, whatever. So we get our bets, and we all get together and said, you know, what do you have for this? This is what I played. I had this. And we go through them all and say, you know, this one still has some value. And, you know, are you going to play it anymore? No, I'm done. I got the amount that I want. Somebody else may go up and say, okay, well, my number is leaning that way too. I wasn't sure, but I'll go play it now. So nobody walks over anybody else's spots in line or anything like that. But afterwards, we'll compare. And I'll, you know, I was talking to Brad one day, and I said, what's your line on this? And he says, that was off too. I thought the same thing. And so then I would go up and say, okay, well, that's one more confirmation on what I'm playing. So I would go up and, you know, I said, do you have it? He goes, yeah, I already played it, or I'm looking to play it, or something like that. And we'll go up and, you know, we'll both play it together, maybe split it because you want to play it for the max. I think it was a dime over at the South Point. So, but, yeah, it's good that people you respect have the same thought process as you do. Yeah, it's worked out pretty well over the years, these games of the years. Normally it's Golden Nugget was the first one to open them up, but now South Point has done it. Our friend Chris Andrews over there wants to be first. So in the battle of them wanting to be first, anybody who's prepared is going to be able to take advantage of that. And we've had some tremendous win percentages on those games of the years over the years because of that, going one-on-one, and it's worked out really well. So the only thing is you're tying your money up for a few weeks, and sometimes if you're playing them at the end of the season, you're tying them up for 6 months. But whatever you got to do to make some money, you know, as long as it's worth it in your bankroll and you've got some additional bankroll to play with, it's a good way to build your profit.
Well, the word that you said in there that I want to focus on is prepared, because as we've seen and as you talk about with Chris Andrews there and his race to be out front, and like I said, and I told you, you know, when we were sitting there in his sports book, I really admire what he's been able to do, putting his neck out there, putting some numbers out there, letting people beat them around, you know, letting a lot of respected guys beat them around as well. You know, some books out there in Las Vegas, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, you know, limit things for a whole lot of people. And that's not really something that happens out there at the South Point. But with that whole getting things out early, and a lot of times it's out there in the month of May, the timelines have been blurred quite a bit between seasons, in the sense that, you know, you're working a lot on baseball, you do a lot with baseball, you're very good at betting baseball. But at the same time, college football now cuts into your baseball preparation and your baseball season because it's so early. So that has been one of the big changes that has taken place out there. Do you feel like that kind of forces you to rely a little bit more on some other people, maybe like a Brad Powers, who, you know, doesn't play baseball? His focus is college football. He said as much here on the show. He's a football handicapper first and foremost. Do you feel like that's been a really big asset for you then?
Yeah, it definitely has. And I've had other guys that I've worked with out here in the past too that don't handicap baseball. It definitely helps. First thing I do in the morning is I put up my baseball, and then I don't have to worry about it until basically when the lines are or the lineups are announced, and then I can go back in and adjust some bets or add some different bets or whatever. But in that meantime, I'm able to work on football, whereas somebody like Brad works on it 24/7, and he's one of the hardest working people. He and Ralph Michaels are two of the hardest working people that I've ever seen when it comes to football. Their personnel knowledge is much better than mine. On the other hand, my betting prowess is much better than theirs, because they lived in Ohio. They never bet out here because they were, you know, you bet offshore, but you can't bet in Las Vegas. So the combination of the two, me knowing where the lines are going to go, when to bet, when not to bet, where to bet, that kind of thing, compared to their knowledge of the individual players, it's a good combination, because we'll have discussions and, you know, Brad will say, well, I really like this play, I'm going to play this one. And I said, well, hold off. I said, there's some reasons why you can get a better line later. And I think it's a nice workaround for all of us, and we can increase our bankrolls by doing that. And it's worked out very well. Some guys, I've never been a personnel guy. I'm more of a situational handicapper for the most part. Power ratings, everything I do is basically on power ratings. But their personnel knowledge, and like Phil Steele's book just came out, his is great. He's got great personnel knowledge also. So you got to incorporate that into your handicapping and getting the best line, knowing where to play it, whether it be a money line or an NFL teaser, or there's just different ways to get around having to maximize your bets. And that's where I come in, and that's what I've done for years.
Now, when it comes to college football, you've got 130 teams that you need to know, and then, of course, in the non-conference portion of the season, a lot of teams are playing FCS opponents as well, throwing a bone to those athletic departments, giving them a little bit of money. It's just the way that the ecosystem works in college football. So there are a lot of teams to cover. So what do? Do you break it down by conference and put together power ratings conference by conference? Do you start you know, off of your 1 through 128 from last year and just sort of go down the list numerically? What's your plan of attack?
Yeah, that's mostly the second thing. What I do is I take my final power ratings from the year before. So I know, for example, what my high team number should be, what my low team number should be. And then I take a look at each individual team and if they're going, if they should be up or down off of that. And that's how I grade them. And that's how I come up with my numbers. There'll be certain teams that are going to be two touchdowns worse than they were last year based on the graduations and maybe a coaching change or a scheme change, something like that. And then there may be other teams that are 10 points better than last year because they've gotten some injured players back. It's the second year of the system or third year of the system. And so there's a lot of things you have to take into account. But basically, my main thing is I've got the numbers that I know the best team in the league should be this, for example, Alabama, and the worst team should be this, whatever, you know. One of the worst teams, Texas State, for example, one of the bad teams in college football. So, and then I just go from there and I compare what the numbers were the year before. And then at the end, I compare them what the totals were from last year. And then when I'm looking, I talked about season wins for the South Point. I don't do a lot of season wins in college football because you're looking at a 12-game sample size. I'd much rather do the 162 in Major League Baseball because when you're doing the 12, obviously, many things can happen, but I still go through and I make lines for every single game on the board, and then I make those into winning percentages, and I add up all my winning percentages, and I find out that certain teams are a little bit better than what they're giving them credit for, and I says, okay, well, now I know when I see, for example, a Ball State line that I have is a better line than what they have, then I say, okay, well, on the season, they don't think as highly as Ball State as I do. That way, I don't get too overly excited about any time the Ball State lines come out because my numbers are just a little bit different than ours. But there's other teams that, you know, should give you an advantage on a week to week basis, and we'll see how it is. But sometimes you just get on a better field than the linesmaker on a team, and you ride it, and once in a while, you know, they'll finally catch up. But you've got 3 or 4 wins in your pocket before that happens.
So we'll sort of start the transition a little bit toward NFL. We'll kind of do it in stages a little bit because, again, college football, 130 teams plus those FCS teams that get involved. So every week in college football, you're looking at 50 or 60 games on the board, you know, if not more, if everybody's in action. So, you know, obviously that's a less efficient market. You're going to have more betting opportunities. The lines are not going to be nearly as tight as they are in the NFL when at most you've got 16 games on the slate. So what do you do in terms of budgeting your time for both of those leagues? Because I would think you're going to spend the majority of your time on college football because that's the market where you can find the most edges.
Definitely. It's probably 90-10 on my football. The NFL, all the games are on TV. You can watch every game. You've got all the information on the NFL. You've got the NFL Network. Information is easily available in NFL. So you don't have, at least in my opinion, you don't have to worry as much about the NFL. You get a good set of power ratings. You know what the key numbers are. You know where the general public is going to be betting those games the next week. If the team looked really good on Monday Night Football, they're going to be looking to jump all over that team the next week. If they look bad on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football, they'll be fading them. So you know where the line's going to be going. So to me, it's all a numbers game when it comes to the NFL. You've got a team that you think should be favored by more than 3. The line is 2. You bet that knowing that you've got that key number in your pocket. And then, of course, the line goes up and eventually it gets to, let's say it gets to 4, 3.5, 4. You can have your thoughts of buying back and, you know, looking for that middle. Or you could let it ride with a better number. But the NFL is all numbers to me. Knowing the teams that, you know, the public likes to bet on the high-scoring teams, the popular teams, the New Englands, the Pittsburghs, those type of teams, the Seattles, knowing that the NFL is an offensive league where most sports bettors don't really pay much attention to the defense, and that's where you get your advantages. You get your quality defenses, and that's where you can make some money in the NFL. So a lot of situational, a lot of based on what the public is going to bet. And that's basically what I do for the NFL. You keep an eye on the personnel moves. But college football, it's much easier to get an advantage in college football just because you're putting in the extra work. And you turn on ESPN, you're not talking about the North Texas running back. You're not talking about, you know, College of Charleston or anything like that. They're talking about the SEC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12. So basically, you just do your work on the smaller conferences, and it'll definitely pay off. And the linesmakers know that. When they're putting up their lines, they know they're going to get 10 times more money bet on the Alabama-Auburn game than they're going to be bet on Kent State and Ball State. So, you know, why do they work as hard on the smaller conferences? So they're not going to be able to take as much money. They just wait for a wise guy to come in and bet it and move the line there, and it saves them a lot of time.
So you mentioned ESPN, and you mentioned all the information that's out there. And, of course, the major mainstream media sports networks have gotten more interested in sports betting over the last few years. I mean, there's always been interest. And you go all the way back to Jimmy the Greek and Brent Musburger and all that type of thing. But it just seems like it's more, I don't know, like acceptable now, I guess I would say, to put the lines on the ticker, to, you know, have some of the analysts talking about some of the betting odds and all these types of things. So, you know, we've seen growing public involvement in this industry over the last few years because people are starting to talk about it, and everyone seems to think that they can beat the market. You know, oh, I'm a sports fan. I can do this. I can pick games, all that type of thing. And as we know, and as listeners of this show know, there's a hell of a lot more to it than that. But for you, you know, the public has gotten more involved. But what has happened from a sales standpoint, you know, not just for you, but maybe some of the other guys that you talk to in the industry? Have you seen a similar level of growth with that?
Not really. It will become a bigger industry once they legalize the sports gambling, and once people who have never really gambled for a living on sports get out there and realize as tough as it's going to be. You mentioned guys who watch every game and know all the players and all that kind of stuff. That's great, but I've yet to find too many people on a part-time basis that can make money betting sports based on that, because everything that they know is on ESPN. And if it's on ESPN and ESPN's talking about it, everybody knows about it. So that's an edge that you don't have. They're not the ones that are reading the Louisiana Tech papers and that kind of stuff. So that's why I say, you know, if you're going to start off in college football, just pick a small conference. You know, I started off 35 years ago. You know, I made a lot of money in the MAC. I'm still known as the MAC expert. I went 11-2 in the MAC last year. So there's not a lot of money being bet on the MAC game, so obviously the lines aren't going to be as tight. And that's one of the advantages that I have. And for anybody looking to do it, seriously try to make some money. Lay off the NFL, lay off all the big-name schools, and just concentrate on the smaller schools where the information is harder to get, and you'll be ahead of the lines maker.
What do you think happens with the future of selling? Because, you know, you have a lot of people nowadays that want to do things on their own. You know, one of the things that I've noticed, and I read an article about this a while ago, is that, you know, this millennial generation that I guess I'm kind of on the fringes of being a part of based on my age, but they're not interested in slot machines. There's been an increase of younger people playing table games now, and that was kind of something that, you know, 5-10 years ago wasn't really the case. I mean, obviously, you know, the older generations like the slot machines. They like to sit there and play them. It's something that they're comfortable with. You know, it's something that doesn't seem particularly daunting. But I remember reading that article in the New York Times, and it kind of got me, I think it was the New York Times, maybe it was the Washington Post, one of the two, but it kind of got me thinking about sports betting, because you've seen this rise of analytics. I mean, you've seen people that are young writers that have their own blogs that are getting jobs in the NHL. I mean, the Arizona Coyotes, for example, have a GM that's not even 30 yet. You know, you've got FanGraphs writers that have moved on, Baseball Prospectus writers that are in MLB front offices. There was just an article about that over on Deadspin a couple of days ago. So, you know, what do you feel like happens with legalization? Do you feel like we see an influx of young people going into this almost like they did daily fantasy, you know, looking to make this a career?
It's quite possibly. Back when I had started, most of my clients were professionals who just didn't have time to handicap, a lot of doctors, a lot of lawyers, that kind of thing. Now with the internet and computers coming in, a lot of guys are able to do it by themselves. You still get a lot of the older guys that just don't have the time, and they've got to seek out a quality alternative. But the more educated the customers are, the younger players are, the better advantages. They're going to have. They're not going to need somebody who does it full time. They've got their own, like you talked about, you know, setting up their own systems and everything they do with the computers. So they get the computer to do all the work for them. That's great. If they're winning, that's great. The whole thing is for me, and we do a lot of teaching videos, and we're on the radio shows, and we're talking about ways to win. I want people to win. If you're able to win them on your own, that's great. The vast majority of the money I make is from sports betting. So if I don't have to sell picks, that's great. You know, it's not a problem for me. It's a minor amount of money that I bring in. So it does frustrate you when you do go through all the work that you've done in the past and before you make so much money and now you make just a fraction of it. That's something to be concerned about. But, you know, there's a lot of guys out there in our industry, unfortunately, that don't bet. They have their entire income based on selling picks, and those are the guys that are struggling now. So, of course, they're going to put out with the biggest plays every day. They got the game of the millennium and all that crap. But that's, you're going to find that in any profession. You got, you know, the people that are doing it for the right reasons and other people just doing it to try to make an income. So you just have to deal with it.
What sort of impact do you feel like that's had on the betting markets? Because like I said, you know, you have a lot of people using this quantifiable analysis. You've got modelers out there that, you know, put in the lineup, it spits out a projected score. They bet based on that, you know, the probability of that team winning, compare it to the money line, that type of thing. Have you found that that has affected you in any way, either positively or negatively, as the market become more efficient?
The market has been more efficient in my estimation, because I do similar things. I've got the, like I said, I've got the power ratings. I've got the numbers that I'm trying to take advantage of. And the other guys are trying to do the same thing. It used to be you would wait until an hour before game time to put your bets in, knowing that you can get the most money on that. Nowadays, more people are betting the overnights. And most of the overnights, at least offshore, you have Pinnacle, you've got BetOnline, I believe, and you've got Chris. And everybody just copies off of that. So if people are going in betting the overnights, they're going to move those numbers pretty quick. And a lot of times you have to bet them early, because you're going to lose all value if you wait until game day. And, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning out here in Las Vegas, when the sports books open, they make their adjustments based on what happened the night before. And they look and they say, Chris has got something at minus 120. We were at minus 135. We better lower it a little bit. And so it's tougher to take advantage of in Las Vegas. There are some overnight lines out here in Vegas. I was at Station's Casino yesterday, and I was able to bet a 140 on a game that offshore was starting to show 145s and higher. So there is some spots if you go out and do your homework, do your legwork on it. But for the most part, it's changed over the years. A lot of people are just betting smaller amounts. They're happy with the 500 or whatever, 1,000 you can get on the overnights, and that's enough for them. They would rather be able to bet something that's, you know, a nickel off at that point, as opposed to something that will be 2 cents off the next day and get more money on. So times have changed in that regard, and you just got to know where the lines are going. And if you're looking to bet a popular pitcher or a popular team, you're going to be betting those on the overnights, because you can lay 220 with Chris Sale, and by the next day you're laying 260, and obviously losing 40 cents of value there, you're not going to make a lot of money in the long run or stuff like that.
Right, and I mean, the concept of copying from a book, it's not a new thing. It's not just something that's come out over the last few years. I mean, people were doing it with Stardust and the Las Vegas sports consultants, you know, even going back into the 80s and just, you know, taking their numbers, waiting for them to open. The difference is, I feel like back then, you know, you had a lot more opportunities to go out there and shop around, because, you know, some of these other books that were out there weren't moving as quickly. Now, you know, all these sports books just pop open an odds screen, and like you said, they'll look at Chris and say, oh, Chris is dealing 120. We've got 135. You know, we better move this. It may not be a move based on action at that particular book. It'll be a move based on error, because somebody else has a number like that. So, you know, that makes it a lot more difficult, I think, right? Because you've got a lot of books now that are under the same umbrella. You've got William Hill that has a ton of books. CG Technology obviously has a lot. MGM Mirage has a lot. There aren't a whole lot of independent shops left out there. So, you know, as you said, you do a lot of it now as a professional bettor. That's the main source of your income. you know, the sales side has kind of been dwindling. So how have you, you know, been able to adapt to that, to where you probably have, you know, fewer shopping around options than in previous years?
You definitely do. And you've got, you know, as before, people would come to Las Vegas and they would just play the lines here in Las Vegas. Well, in the old days, you know, you could walk down the strip and get five or six different lines on a game. I came out in 97, and basically that was over by the time I had gotten here. But the guys that were out here in the 80s said, yeah, I'd go to Stardust and get a minus three and go, you know, two doors down and get a plus five and on the same guy, a game in midweek or whatever, football. You don't see that anymore. What you got to do is take advantage of whatever you can. Now in Las Vegas, they've got the app. Just about everybody has an app. All the bigger companies have apps, and you're able to use those apps, and that instantly you don't have to run all the way down to the sports book anymore, which is great. But it's also the guys that there's some guys that like to be able to run around, and they're not able to. They were able to take advantage of that. So, but there's, you talked about the independent books. We just got a scare the other day. Some of the bars in town, a lot of them are made up of a group that owns some of these bars, and they've decided they're going to buy the South Point, or excuse me, not the South Point, the Arizona Charlie's and two Arizona Charlie's locations and the Stratosphere. Well, that's an independent book, and now we have to see, okay, are they going to go back in? Are they going to choose to partner up with William Hill or somebody, or are they going to continue with their own line service and make their own lines? Now, that would knock off another independent. Jerry's Nugget, downtown Las Vegas, they don't have an app. It's an independent, and you can find different lines going there and down there. The only problem is it's not in the greatest neighborhood, and you probably don't want to stay down there for long, but that's the sacrifices you have to make. You could drive out to Mesquite. They've got an independent out at Mesquite. The problem is he won't take a bet. He'll play with you, play around with you, and it's, I don't know how they still have a license doing it. That's another total show, but he'll change the lines on you when you're trying to bet. The line's minus 10, the line's, you know, 7 somewhere else. You try to bet the 10, he'll say the line changed to 9. Okay, I'll take the 9. Well, the line just changed to 8. And there's only two places out there that have their books, and you're standing in one of them. What are the odds of somebody at the other place betting the exact same games? There's an independent, couple independents in Reno. There's an independent in Tahoe. You just have to make your runs, and I've spent more time in Reno than I have in Vegas some of these years. In fact, I just one of my friends in Vegas just talked to him the other day. He just bought a house in Lake Tahoe. He got tired of dealing with it. Getting shut out here in Vegas and not getting the good lines. So now he's working out of Lake Tahoe, which is a lot of fun in the summer when you're running around getting lines. Not fun in the winter when it's football season. You've got to run around in the snow, and it's a bad situation. But you got to do what you got to do to make a living, and that's what he's doing, and he'll have a lot of success doing it.
Last thing I'll ask you about here, since we're kind of try to bring this thing full circle a little bit with the current landscape of sports betting, is legalization's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. We're not entirely sure when. Who knows? It could be within the next 3 years, next 5, next 10. Hopefully not the next 15, but you know, we'll have to see how long it takes to put up a case that, you know, the sports leagues are going to stop resisting and to actually get the politicians to take a good hard look at it. What do you think happens in the long term with sports betting once it gets legalized? Because you're going to have some of these big operators. William Hill will probably be at the forefront. I mean, they already have a big presence in Vegas, huge presence overseas in Europe. They'll probably be the ones driving the bus, putting terminals in across the country, or, you know, operating sports books in casinos or whatever the case may be. Do you think legalization for somebody that's been a professional bettor like you for such a long time, is that something that's going to help you, do you think?
It will help me as long as they don't raise the 10% juice. Right now, it's 11 to 10 in Las Vegas. From offshore, it's the Pinnacles, and some of the like will have lesser numbers. But if they legalize the sports and then they decide to charge more than 10%, let's say they charge 12% juice, it's going to shut out the professional bettors, because there's no sense in doing that when it's actually – they're going to legalize it at 12%. If they legalize it at 12%, now I haven't heard any of this, but they're trying to make as much money as possible. You know how the government is. If they make it at 12%, it's not going to be successful because you're still going to have all. You're not going to chase out any of your neighborhood bookies. They're just going to cut you back and charge 10% again. Who's going to pay 12% for something that's 10%? So they need to go in and charge the same line, the same betting percentages that they do in Las Vegas, the 11 to 10, the minus 120, which is pretty much the way it is now on a six-point NFL teaser. They're just going to have to do all that, the same numbers as they do in Vegas, or it's not going to be successful. The bookies will once again rule New York and all the rest of the cities out there, the Youngstowns and all that they've been known for, so Kansas City. So they have to do it the right way, and we'll see what happens. If they come in and legalize it and make it available to the public in places where you can go into a kiosk at 7-Eleven and play a William Hill line or something like that, and if they're laying the 11 to 10, it'll be great. But since this all comes down to the government and the greed of the government, I'm not going to jump to anything until we see how they're going to end up figuring this out.
That's really interesting because the last thing I want to ask you about, and like I said, I was in Vegas a couple of weeks ago. You know, you look around on the strip, you've got 6 to 5 blackjack everywhere unless you're playing 15 or higher minimums. And I mean, that's fine for me. But, you know, if I've got my fiance walk around with me and she wants to play blackjack, she's not going to sit at a $15 table. She wants to play five because she's going to feel bad if, you know, I have bad variance and we lose money. So I'm stuck sitting there playing 6 to 5. You got all those side bets with huge house edges. I know, I think it was Venetian or Palazzo, one of the two, you know, was lowering odds on craps. I think they were just down to 2x odds. You've got continuous shuffle machines everywhere. You've got triple zero roulette out there, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And I know you're a big time video poker player as well. I know you've got a very hard time finding those 9 to 6 machines. It's really interesting because you look at all these small little edges that they're trying to accumulate over the players. Then you talk about, you know, legalization possibly not having the 10% juice on sports betting. It's something I really haven't thought of until you mentioned it, but now it really scares me given some of the other changes that we've seen out there in the gambling landscape.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned the video poker. It's gotten to the point where I can't play video poker in Las Vegas because, I can play if I play downtown. Downtown is still good for players, especially if you like to play the coins. They've got a lot of those coin machines. I don't like that. I just like to get my money in, get it out, spit out the ticket, that kind of thing. But, for example, I'm a 7 Stars member at Harrah's Properties, Caesars, Harrah's, that kind of thing. Their machines in Las Vegas, they only have a few good paying machines. They've got maybe one or two at each casino, but they don't give you the comps that you would get normally. So I have to travel. I was traveling to New Orleans, and then all of a sudden New Orleans cut back on those machines. So now I don't go to New Orleans to play video poker. I'll go to Lake Tahoe, or some other places in California or whatever just to get the better paying machines. And I live here in Vegas. I shouldn't have to do that, but I need to do this in order to make a profit. If I'm playing a negative expectation game at your casino, you better give me enough back in comps to make it worth my while to play. And they don't. They keep cutting it back and taking out the better paying machines, and then they wonder why people are only playing your penny slots and your nickel slots. It's because people just don't have the money to bet big if you're not going to give them a decent chance to get their money back. And, you know, and a lot of the times I will play the video poker right on the border just to get the higher card so I can get bigger bets in on the sports book. You'll go in and you want to bet, you know, say you want to bet $5,000 at a sports book, they'll ask for your player's card. And if you don't have a player's card or you've got the minimum player's card, they'll say, well, we'll give you $2,000. It's just many things they're doing now, and it's from the top down. It's not the people running the sports book. It's not like it was back in the old days when Vegas would take a bet when they had the mafia here. It's all corporate now, and most of the guys in corporate have never worked in a sports book. They don't know anything about a sports book, and they just look at the bottom line, and they don't understand variance. You play the slot machines. You play the table games. You know what you're going to get in every single month. There's a certain percentage of hold. And baseball and sports is a little bit different. You have your big leagues. if you're booking all your money in the NFL and all of a sudden your big week, the Seattle's win and the Patriots win, the Packers win, the Steelers win, the Broncos win, well, I don't care how good of a bookmaker you are, you're going to lose money that week. And they don't understand that that's what's going to happen. So it's a totally different ball game, and you just have to go with the flow and change in some of the things you're looking at. For baseball, you start playing more Willie Ford first inning lines, things like that, first five inning lines. So in football, you're playing first half, you're playing team points. You just have to vary what you have, and it's not as easy as it was years ago.
And I think the last question here and the final point to end on is where does it end? You know, I mean, people complain about resort fees. We know why the hotels and the properties do that. Now you've got MGM Mirage Properties. You got to pay for parking. Caesars is incorporating that as well. I mean, even Westgate, you got to pay to park. You can get it validated at some of these places, of course. But, you know, just this nickel and diming and then increasing these house edges little by little. And then, you know, like I said, I mean, who knows what ultimately ends up happening with sports betting. It's just that's the most disappointing thing is, you know, you go to Vegas, you're walking around, you see a full table, continuous shuffle, $10, 6 to 5. And you just walk past it and you go, you know, that's the problem is that you've got so many people that don't care. They don't realize what's happening to them. They don't realize the robbery going on right in front of their eyes. And it just kind of makes you wonder, you know, at what point, you know, do we see something come back in favor of the player?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And once they started the paid parking down here, I won't set foot into an MGM property. Unless I happen to be walking by, I'm not going to park. I'm not going to pay to park down there. Matter of fact, I went to a concert the other day, and I pulled into a locals casino, and I Ubered. And I Ubered down to the Strip, Ubered back, and it cost me less than the parking was. And I was able to support a local businessman that's running the Uber, and I don't have to worry about trying to get out of these parking lots and the traffic down in Vegas. It's ridiculous. I've got season tickets for the hockey, and now I've got to figure out how I'm going to get down there because I'm not going to pay $20. A day to park for the hockey, and it's ridiculous when it comes to any of that. The restaurants and the casinos are suffering because people won't pay just to go in and pay $20, and all of a sudden then you got to go into the restaurant and pay the restaurant fee. It's, and in my opinion, it's just bad management and greedy management. They're playing off of all the people coming into town that don't know any better. Say you're the 6-5 blackjack, you paid parking, a lot of things that you talked about, the resort fees. Those are guys that are coming in, staying at the hotels, and they're just happy to be in Vegas, and they don't even think of it. Well, the locals are all going to stay with the local sportsbook or local casinos out here, your Stations, your Coast, and your Boyd Properties, that kind of stuff, because they're not going to go down the Strip, and they're not going to pay that. So they're taking away. You know, you've got like 1.5 million people around here. None of them are going to go down the Strip because of that. So they're I don't know what they're thinking. It's eventually somebody's going to go out there. You know, Atlantic City was out there for a long time, and all of a sudden they didn't keep up. And somebody's going to go out there, and they're going to build, you know, how Branson did with Nashville. Nashville was everything, and then all of Branson decided, you know, we could do that too. Well, somebody's going to come in. You know, let's say L.A. decides to start building up casinos and everything's legalized. They start building up casinos. The people from California are going to have the same interest in coming to Las Vegas when they can just stay. They don't have to deal with the I-15 and everything. They'll be able to play in California. It'll be a different ballgame down in the future. We'll have to see if Vegas makes the adjustments. And it used to be you can go down to Vegas and get a $397 buffet. Now it's $25, $30 for a buffet. It's a totally different ballgame.
No, it absolutely is. Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, what's going on over at WagerTalk right now?
We're taking a break from videos for a couple of weeks here. A lot of guys are taking vacations. Marco went back to Pittsburgh, got to see his Penguins win. But we're going to be back, I believe, next week with videos again. It'll be on Wednesdays, and we'll talk some football coming up. Obviously, a lot of us have been putting our money out there where our mouths are on these games of the year and week one lines. And we'll be talking about that and try to get everybody prepared for this upcoming season.
And that's at B Leonard Sports on Twitter. Brian, thank you so much for joining me, man. I know we talked about a lot of different things, covered a lot of different stuff, but I enjoyed it. I always do enjoy talking to you, and hopefully we'll chat with you again real soon.
Sounds great. Best of luck to everyone. Hope you have a nice summer.
Great stuff there today from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Coming up on Thursday, we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. That'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Thursday.